My name is Jacqueline Roshu. I'm the Assistant Administrator with the Secretary of State's office. I want to welcome you to the Military Overseas and Absentee Voting Seminar that we have this morning. I'd like to introduce our panel today. First, we have Bob Carey. Bob Carey's Senior Fellow with the National Defense Committee. Sally Crissel, the Director of Hamilton County Board of Elections. Kelly Palante, the Director of Trumbull County Board of Elections. Pat McDonald, Deputy Director of Cuyahoga County Board of Elections, and Patricia Wolf, the Administrator of Elections with the Ohio Secretary of State's office. First off, what I'd like to do is allow the panelists to either provide a little bit more information about themselves or just have an opening statement. So we'll go ahead and start with Mr. Carey. Right there.
Thank you very much. As I said, Bob Carey with the National Defense Committee. We are a grassroots military service organization focusing primarily on individual military rights and expanding and strengthening the civil-military relationship. One of our key programs is the military absentee voting program that we have. And within that, we have a program that we just started up this last year called the Military Ballot Protection Program, where we allied ourselves with the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights, and basically had folks on the ground on election day at polling sites, mostly in this case at where absentee ballots are going to be collected, but also working with a number of the states before the election as issues started to arise with military absentee ballots. We were involved with the situation out in Virginia, both the initial one of Fairfax County and the issue of whether the federal right and absentee ballots were going to be acceptable, and then also with the follow-on with Virginia failing to send out absentee ballots in a timely manner for those that had requested absentee ballots in a timely manner. I wanted to put some of this in context. When you look at the agenda, we talk about electronic transmission of ballots and the possibility of pilot projects. The fact of the matter is that the postal delivery of ballots is going to be limited by the sheer laws of physics. There's only so fast that you can get, large quantities of mail to and from military personnel, especially those in contingency areas. And the fact of the matter is that even if the mail does get over there, the military personnel may not be available to receive it. They may be out on patrol. They may be out at sea. Case of ballistic missile submarine sailors, they're under the sea for extended periods of time. But for a large group of military personnel, it does, regardless of what you may try to do in order to be able to expedite postal mail delivery of absentee ballots, the system is still one that was fundamentally developed to deliver absentee ballots around the corner to someone you probably knew, rather than deliver it around the world to someone that is dodging bullets. And so we need to find alternatives to it. The fact of the matter is that in 2008 election cycle, the Military Postal System Agency, despite putting millions of dollars into the expediting of absentee ballots for military voters, still said that if you were in Iraq and Afghanistan, you needed to have your absentee ballot back in the mail at least 28 days prior to the election. If you're anywhere else overseas, they recommend at least 21 days prior, implying that the round-trip transit time for a military ballot to get from the local election official to the military voter and back to the local election official was 56 days for those in Iraq and Afghanistan, and for anywhere else, 42 days. So when the Election Assistance Commission and the Federal Voting Assistance Program and the Pew Center on the States all say you need at least 45 days, the National Defense Committee thinks you probably need at least 60. I mean, we've been in Afghanistan for 7 years now, and we're just now getting our mail systems to the point where we can deliver it in 56 days round trip, guarantee in 56 days. Now, I doubt you're going to be able to move up your, what's going to be easier? Moving up your mail delivery times, which may very well require you to move up your ballot certification times, move up your primaries, et cetera, move up the presidential conventions, or to figure out new ways of electronic transmission of balloting. We think the latter, and we strongly encourage that the focus be on, at this stage, the email transmission of blank ballots. Right now, Ohio does allow for the faxing of blank ballots. The fact of the matter is, though, is that people don't, the military has very limited access to fax machines. The military is moving away from fax machines. It's almost all email. And so, and where you see the greatest disenfranchisement in the military, in the 2006 election, whereas 40% of the general population voted, only 22% of the military voted. Whereas 85% of the general population were able to cast their absentee ballots, only 26% of the military population were able to cast their absentee ballots. 494,000 military personnel requested absentee ballots in 2006 and were unable to cast them. Now, Ohio is a little better. Ohio is a 37% cast rate versus 85% for the overall population. So better, but still less than half what the general population. And that's the National Defense Committee's goal. We don't necessarily think that we should be looking at voter participation rates as the measure, because, you know, people may not want to vote. But if they've expressed a desire to vote, they should be at the same level as any other absentee voter. And then the last thing I'd say is that if you're looking at the difference between fax and email, the fact of the matter is that the fax is essentially insufficient, especially for the junior enlisted. Only 11% of the junior enlisted personnel in 2006 were able to vote, whereas about 42% of the officers were able to vote. But the enlisted, whereas in general, only about 15% of the total military doesn't have access to a fax machine, 37% of the enlisted have no access to fax machines at all. And in fact, the more junior enlisted, who are the predominantly the ones that are disenfranchised, are 2 to 6 times more likely to want to use an email for the receipt of their blank ballot than the rest of the military population. So, you know, as we're looking at this, you know, email is the way to go. The fax machine, you can do that all you want. The fact of the matter is that the vast majority of the military population is not going to have access to a fax machine.
Thank you, Mr. Carey. Sally, do you have anything you'd like to share with us?
Sure. I think what he said, any of us who've been in boards of elections and trying to make sure ballots get to service personnel know the problems that we have with respect to getting a ballot to someone and getting it back on time. We've struggled with that in Hamilton County. And what I would like to suggest, or see what other boards may think about this, is trying to establish kind of just a really quick cheat sheet for how a military person can get registered, get their application in, the information about faxing the ballots, to answer questions to any military person who wants to know how to vote in Ohio. I think a lot of times they're not aware, the military voters aren't aware of what kinds of timelines we're on and what kind of options are available to them. And so we try to work in our area with the National Guard and recruiting offices, but maybe if we could have some sort of standardized list of what you need to know if you're a military voter in Ohio that would help them, you know, with their process of getting their paperwork in order first. And then I think we do, since we already have the fax capability to send a ballot in Ohio, I think email PDF forms would probably be the best solution at this point in time for military folks. And then one other issue that we had in Hamilton County, and I think we talked with Pat Wolf or someone from the Secretary's office last election, is I think we need to look at the definition of who an armed services person is. We had someone who was on assignment from the United States government, but they didn't meet the definition of a military service person. They were clearly assigned out of the country. They could not tell us where for their job with the United States government. And currently, we were not able to send them a ballot because they didn't meet that criteria. So we'd like to have someone look at that as well. Other than that, I'm open to hearing what anybody else may have in terms of ideas.
Thank you, Sally. Kelly, would you like to share anything with us this morning?
Yes. I'd first like to say it's a great honor to be here, and I feel very privileged to be asked to be part of the panel. And I want to commend all the election officials here because I know you all work really hard. One thing that we noticed in our board during last year's election was our main absentee clerk spent a good majority of her days during the absentee system emailing back and forth with various military and overseas persons from our county. On our website, we have several links, and we actually have two different links for the military people. One is directly underneath our absentee button, and it takes you, there's another link that says federal postcard application, and that takes you right into that website, and it's a step-by-step process. I know Joanne from our office, she said that she would be on the phone with some of the military people sometime, and she was basically getting them on the website and then showing them to walk through so they could print out their application. Then another link we have is actually to the Overseas Voter Foundation web link, and that's where you can put in what state you're from and then proceed from there. And like with all military, they might have grown up in your county, they may have been stationed in another state, and now they might be overseas. So I think that Overseas Voter Foundation link is also useful to the military so they can decide where their home base actually is and for their spouses. One thing that we'll probably be getting into later is I have a concern with those federal applications that we have to keep on hand for the next federal election. And I know out of the amount of federal applications that we kept over for the last federal election, we had about a 39% rate of those that were either returned as undeliverable or not returned at all. And the military is moving around so much that that is a concern of mine. And I agree with Sally in the fact that the military may not be educated very well or have the resources. And I didn't know if Mr. Carey could share with us if there's information packets that are given to the military specifically, like one fact sheet, at least with their own state secretary of states being listed, and then maybe they can start from there. Thank you.
Thank you. Pat, do you have anything to share with us?
Just that it is an honor being here sitting next to Pat Wolf. You know, I think everybody wants to hear what she has to say about military voting as well as anything else you might want to share. I agree with the other panelists. Emailing is the way to go. The fax is now getting outdated. We have high technology now integrated in everything we do, in our banking, our financial institutions. We do online training, trading. Credit card transactions. So I think we are at the stage that we can develop a secured mechanism to do emailing for overseas and military voters.
Thank you, Pat. Pat Wolf, if you'd please address us.
One of the things with Ohio, we were one of the pilot states, if any of you remember the SERVE program that the DOD had, which was the internet access for doing the ballots. We were one of the pilot states for that. Unfortunately, that program did not go forward. But it's one of the things that Ohio would like to look at is the electronic transmission. One of the main concerns from the office and what we're seeing from talking with individuals is the secrecy of the ballot coming through and also making sure that the ballot is not changed from the time it's cast to the time that it gets to the County Board of Elections. So I think it's one of the big concerns that we need to take a look at in doing the electronic transmission. I heard mentioned PDFs, other types of files that could be done so that those files could not be changed. I think those are types of things that we can discuss today to see what would be the best way we can move forward with electronic transmission.
Okay.
Just to make sure, National Defense Committee has not been advocating the emailing of voted ballots, only of blank ballots to the service members. We still believe that at this point the technology is not robust enough to support the emailing back of voted ballots in any way that will protect the secrecy of the ballot. If someone wants to give that up because they have no other alternative, that's their personal choice. And we think that they should be allowed to do that, but that should not be the goal at this point.
Okay. We're going to start with our agenda that we have prepared today. Some of the questions have already been touched on by the panel. Electronic transmission of the ballots. The men and women serving our country overseas have limited access to U.S. mail service. And to assist these voters, how can we implement electronic transmission of ballots overseas? First, I'd like to ask anyone on the panel to please respond to that, and then when we open it up to the audience. Any panelists want to touch on that? Mr. Carey, I think you've already talked about it. Anyone? Kelly, go ahead.
I know when we have to transmit our absentee files to the Secretary of State's office for each election, how that looks when we copy it over to send down to the Secretary of State's office doesn't actually necessarily resemble what our ballot looks like that we can print on our on-demand printer. So I think that issue there might have to be looked at with our vendors if we can get into an electronic transmission of ballot to make sure that it is in the same capacity as what our voters actually get in the mail on paper. That's a concern that I would have.
Anyone else on the panel want to address that question?
Well, I would just like to add the comment that, you know, after Bob made his statement, that I would be an advocate of the voted ballot being returned through email. We find in Cuyahoga County, and I imagine other counties, that the problem is not so much them receiving the ballot. It's the problem is for them to, after they receive the ballot, is having the time to fill it out and send it back to us within the restrictive time frames for them to be casted and count. So I think, you know, we can look, you know, phase one certainly is important. We PDF file them the ballot, they print that off, they sign it, they send it back, but we're still are going to be in the same predicament of the ballot is going to be returned late. I think technology addresses this now, that we can have security mechanism from security codes to what we do online all the time when we make financial transactions. You're putting in a code, you're putting in a security measure that can alleviate some of the privacy and concerns that some of the groups might have.
There is one other alternative too. Los Angeles County has a pretty nice system, and where basically a voter just goes, puts in their address, and it generates a PDF blank ballot all the way down to the local elections automatically. And all the voter has to do is download it, print it out, fill it out, send it in. Now that doesn't provide, you could expand that software in order to be able to provide for numbered ballots, numbered absentee ballots, so that's what you needed to have. I mean, from the technological perspective, you know, we could be moving even past email and just post the blank ballots. And you're still going to have the voter signature, the voter counter signature as from the original registration and absentee ballot application in order to be able to confirm voter identity. The emailing alone is probably at some point is going to be old technology.
At this time, I'd like to open it up to the audience if you have any questions or comments that you would like to present to the panelists and the other audience members.
Hi, I'm Janet Jay. I'm writing a book on voting in the U.S. today. I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I'm a judge of elections as well. And I was glad to hear you differentiate between sending a blank ballot via email, which I think is a great thing to do, but not getting it returned that way. To the best of my knowledge, and I talked to a lot of computer experts, the security is not there to ensure the secrecy of a ballot. And there's a major difference between most of our systems. See, most of our systems that we do online that can be secure are set up to identify the person. The vote is set up to be non-identified. And so that creates a major problem there. You don't want to identify, and yet so there's no way to keep it secure in the same way that you can set up a system where it's based on identifying a person and that kind of thing. So I just wanted to throw that in. Thank you.
Panelists, any comments?
Well, I would just add, and I agree with that. And there is a strong premises of the secrecy of the ballot on that. But then I would interject with absentee balloting. You know, absentee balloting does show the person's name on the ballot and who they voted for. So when we look at a global perspective of how people vote in Ohio and the United States, you can't say that the secrecy of every ballot is not identified to a particular individual. So, and I don't know the technology aspect. I don't know if we're there yet, but I think we're at a point that we should really research that and really go in that direction to see if we can do the email voting and returning the ballot that way.
And that's one of the points where we got stopped when we participated in the pilot project with the Department of Defense for internet voting, and that's where I think it broke down, if I'm correct,
yes.
Pat, in remembering. That we couldn't figure out how you'd identify the person enough to be able to know they should be a voter, but disconnect how they voted. And so that's always going to be an issue. I think, though, with making sure that someone gets to vote when they're overseas, you know, trying to utilize a PDF form back to us is probably, you know, going to be for those of us now under our budget constraints, the best way to try to do that.
Just real quick, the National Institutes, in the 2005 National Defense Authorization Act, the Election Assistance Commission was tasked with developing internet voting standards for UOCAVA voters. Now, they still have not been able to do that. They've had a number of other requirements placed upon them without the funding necessary in order to be able to complete those. So this one has fallen to the end. Frankly, I can understand why they put it at the end. It's a tough nut to crack, and they probably don't want to have to deal with it right now. They'd rather see the technology develop first. But there is an interim report released in December of 2008 by the National Institutes of Standard Technology, who is basically being subcontracted by EAC to do this. And they said distribution of blank ballots to the UOCAVA voter can be reliably facilitated and expedited by the use of fax, email, or web transmission. The threats associated with using fax, email, and the web transmission can be mitigated through the use of procedural and technical security controls and therefore do not pose significant risks to the integrity of elections. So that's the blank ballot transmission. Pretty unequivocal. They did raise concerns about returning the voted ballot. But, I mean, again, most of those concerns are about the secrecy of a ballot. Now, with a regular absentee ballot, you do have a double envelope. So the first envelope is where the voter identification is. That's confirmed. That vote, the two envelopes are then separated, and the one that doesn't have the voter identification is thrown in the pile of all the rest of the absentee ballots. Hugh Gallagher from Skytel is here. If he had some discussion about how you might be able to do that electronically, I think that might be probative as well.
Good morning, Peg. Would you like to introduce yourself to everyone?
I'm Peg Rosenfield with the League of Women Voters. I have two direct interests in this. One, I have a permanent overseas voter. My daughter has voted from overseas for a number of years. Second, I used to deal with military voters when I worked in the Secretary of State's office back in the Middle Ages, when it was all paper. I have a couple of comments and questions on how things have changed. One of the very serious problems we had, and I'm wondering if this has changed, is particularly military ballots, that we didn't get the application for a ballot until like the week before the election. And frankly, there was no way in hell that they were going to get a ballot. And even if we could have transmitted them electronically, which hadn't been invented, they couldn't have gotten it in time to get it back in time to be counted. And I'm wondering, one thing is whether you're still getting them. You know, if you're right here on the spot, you can put off deciding to apply for an absentee ballot, kind of tiddle around up until the last minute. But you can't if you're overseas. That's just not going to work. Is that still a major problem? And there are just numbers of these sort of logistical problems that I don't know how. For instance, you're talking about the ID envelope and the mailing envelope. Well, if you email a blank ballot, which I think is terrific, is this person supposed to figure out how to take a piece of paper and fold it up and glue it to make a secrecy envelope and then put it in a mail envelope? I mean, because I remember seeing the instructions for how to make a secrecy envelope, and I'm thinking, oh, I don't think so. So then would you not count the ballot because it wasn't inserted in a secrecy envelope? And another related problem is that our experience was that while there was supposed to be a voting officer in every unit, and they had a copy of the Federal Voting Assistance Program booklet that told the rules for every state, this was usually some very junior officer. And frankly, they didn't think being the voting officer was high on their priority list. And people were being given bad information or no information. And I don't know whether anything's been done or what can be done to make this a priority, to get the information to members of the military particularly early enough so they know what they have to do to vote in Ohio to get it done in time to get their ballot, you see, to get the whole thing moving. That's all.
Thank you, Peg. Does anyone want to address that?
Well, I'm sorry.
The laws have changed with respect to people who apply for absentee ballots through the military and civilian overseas. So now we get the request, and we automatically hold it, the request for two federal elections. So we're automatically sending ballots. We're not waiting for a request. Well, what we do every time we mail from Hamilton County is we put a note into our ballot saying, you know, please let us know if your status changes, i.e. you leave the military, you leave the country that you're in, let us know where you've moved to. And that really helped us cut down on the number of ballots we send out that don't get delivered. So we try to stay in email contact with any military person or civilian overseas about their changes. And we automatically send a ballot. We automatically notify them when they're about ready to leave our system because they've reached that time period. We just had that big batch. And so that they can re-up prior to the next set of ballots being mailed out. So that's sort of an automatic thing. And we're not getting a lot of late minute requests. Although, again, the information on someone being able to get a fax ballot and that kind of information is still a problem in getting it to the voter overseas.
Which the issue you're talking about with the changing of the addresses drives again towards emailing of ballots. My email address is and always will be robert.h.carey@navy.mil. I'm a Navy reservist. I've had the same email address wherever I've been, and I can access that from anywhere in the world. So, you know, having the email is going to obviate a lot of that problem of the addresses. As far as the voting assistance officers, you're exactly right. I mean, it's not a high priority. You know, you have this 22-year-old lieutenant who is probably a first-time voter themselves, fresh out of college, and has becomes a voting assistance officer. It's not exactly, the voting assistance guide is not exactly a booklet. I would describe it more like a tome. It's 460 pages long. So you have your average, you know, first-time voter, first lieutenant who is given this duty, and along with 10 other collateral duties. He's out in the forward operating base, just about to go on his daily patrol, and the corporal comes up to him and says, hey, I need to get my absentee ballot application. He says, well, I got a patrol to go on. My book is on the desk. That kid goes back, looks at the 460-page book, and says, well, I guess I'm not voting for my candidate this election cycle. What I would recommend on this is the strong support by the Ohio delegation to the Uniform Law Commission's current efforts to standardize, to develop a standardized model law for military voting. Our goal is to reduce that that voting assistance guide from 460 pages to 10 pages. So I'm going to give a shout out to Professor Steve Hufter from Ohio State University, who is the reporter for the Uniform Law Commission's effort on this. And, frankly, a standardized all right law would be better than a great non-standardized law. You know, I'd rather the voting assistance officers would be able to navigate a consistent process for every state much more easily than 55 processes that they currently have to navigate. So it's not as bad of a problem for the Ohio National Guard because they're all from Ohio, maybe a few from Pennsylvania or Indiana or Michigan, you know, that want to serve in a particular unit. But, you know, they deploy as a unit. They're all the same. Your average active duty unit of 300 people is going to have 25 to 30 different states represented. So standardizing that process will really help that voting assistance officer.
Sort of wanted to do a follow-up to Sally when she was talking about the notice that they send out to voters that are requesting absentee ballots. The law was actually in Ohio now requires that a form is sent out with every FPCA request when you're sending the ballot out that you include that form because it does remind the voter that if you move, you're going to be stationed somewhere else, et cetera, that you do the follow-up and send it to the board. So I think that does help. As just another reminder that if you're starting to move or we're getting ready to send ballots out, you can do this. And I know some of the boards too, much as Sally made statements on, and if they have email addresses, which a lot now with the FPCA are putting email addresses on, that you are sort of getting in contact with them about 60 days before the election, make sure their address is still the same, verifying their address so that you make sure that you are sending the ballot to the correct, because in a lot of cases you're going to get comments back no longer overseas. So you have that for your records, and because it is by email, you can have something you can print out and put with the record.
Thank you. Sir, would you like to introduce yourself and
Hi, my name is Hugh Gallagher. I'm with Sitel Secure Electronic Voting. I participated on the Everest security project. My responsibility was the Election Operations Internal Controls Assessment Report. Good reading. I've also, if you want to go
Thank
to that
you for
real
that
quick,
commercial.
The, I have also had the great privilege of working with Bob and Steve on the Uniform Law Commission initiatives to try to standardize things amongst the states. A number of the things we're bringing up today are things we've been talking about for a period of time. The one suggestion I would make, and I think we brought this up in Chicago this past weekend, I would argue that you want to have as many channels available to get a ballot out as possible. And the idea being is, even though technology may be there, there are going to be some people that are going to be reticent to want to use that technology. So you have to have a number of different ways to getting the ballot out. I know Bob and I have had this discussion before on email ballots. It also presupposes that at the end where your email ballot arrives, you have a printer. The email ballot without a printer is useless. A lot of forward operating bases, I'm an ex-naval officer myself, are not going to have access to that. We already talked about facts, how facts are disappearing. We need to look at alternative methods, and of course this is self-serving because I was part of Operation Bravo, which some of you may or may not have heard of, which is bring remote access voting overseas. It was a pilot project conducted in Okaloosa County, Florida this past election where Yukahava voters, primarily military personnel, were able to vote via secure internet from three locations overseas using what we call combat kiosks. The concept there was we went through the state certification process in Florida, which as many of you know is pretty rigorous, but as important to the people who have concerns about it, we brought in David Wagner. Avi Rubin had a PhD candidate in there. We brought in the people who have expressed nationally the most concern about using internet-based technologies to review our source code, review our technology. What we're finding now is that the discussions are no longer, you can't use these types of technologies. The discussions now seem to be, how do we best use these technologies? I would argue that we want multiple channels. There are, in fact, we are working with NIST now. Bob said it absolutely correctly, that it has not been a high priority to develop testing certification processes for internet voting. There are currently 15 states with pending legislation now in the current sessions to allow internet pilot projects in time for the 2010 election cycle for primarily military personnel, true internet voting. And what we are working with NIST to help them develop those types of technologies, I would just simply say we want multiple channels, multiple ways to get information out. Each person is going to have a comfort level. Some people like DREs, some people want a paper ballot. We don't want to restrict it as much as we don't want to restrict how we bring the FPCAs in, whether they're on paper. The address issue we're working on with the Uniform Law Commission, even though I fill out an FPCA, I got PCS to a new duty station, I might be getting some TDY orders all of a sudden to move out. So you may be sending my ballot to Stuttgart, but I've been deployed and I'm now in Iraq. And so the mail is trying to constantly keep up with where you are.
And it's even worse for ships.
And we all know that, you and I know that from on board ship. Mail is not necessarily the most timely medium that we got on board ships. However, now they get Monday night football in some instances on board ship, right? So there are technologies, even within today's environment, that are being proven to be secure and reliable. And a number of organizations are looking at this. CERV, I know, has been held up as a classic example of potentially not what to do, but technology has moved beyond that. And NIST and other agencies and even those groups who have expressed concerns about it are now recognizing that at least merits discussion. It merits an evaluation based on where technologies are today. So That's my two cents.
I was on board USS America during Desert Storm. I was able to watch the Super Bowl out at sea just after I returned from a mission, but I wasn't able to receive my local millage election absentee ballot because we were moving from one side of the Arabian Peninsula to the other, and the mail just couldn't catch up.
Yes, sir. Please introduce yourself.
Good afternoon. My name is Kyle Boland, and I work for a nonprofit organization in Granville, Ohio, Ohio Campus Compact. And we generally work on community service and service learning in higher education, but I work on college student voting and civic engagement. I want to follow up to the last gentleman's point to wholeheartedly support online voting. I think a testament to that is we all read about President Obama's BlackBerry. If that can be secure, I think we have the technology to do voting, especially with our military officers. So, in terms of my generation, I think if you asked 100 military officers if they would rather be able to vote online and have maybe one database in the Secretary of State's office hold their information of who they voted for that's secure, or the other option would be to do the paper ballot, I think 99 out of 100 are going to support voting online. I do all my checkbooks, all the finances, credit cards online. Somewhere there is a person that sees that, or at least a central server. Now I have faith that that's safe. Some people don't, but they still go to a restaurant and hand a credit card over to a stranger and goes in a back room and can copy it. But there's always going to be a person or something or a computer that sees that information. Now, can we just devise some policies and procedures from state and statewide and trust our elections officials to keep that data safe? Well, I think if speaking from folks of my generation, I think that we would support the online voting and could trust that. Thank you.
Thank you.
I wonder how much of the opposition to online voting is not necessarily because of the particular technologies associated with online voting, but because such systems would, by their very nature, preclude the possibility of voter verification trails. Now, you can develop additional voter verification trails on top of that, but I get the impression that a number of people are opposed to online voting not because of the particular technological risks associated with it, but because they believe it's going to lead to an inability of them to be able to force voter verification trail on voting systems in a much broader context. Something to consider.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm Pam Smith from Verified Voting Foundation, and maybe I can answer your question, and I wanted to respond to the previous speakers. Our organization has a statement on our website, the computer technologist statement on internet voting, and it doesn't oppose internet voting. What it says is that we need to have an informed discussion about the process and the concept and the risks. And there are national security issues at risk here. There was recently a CIA agent who spoke at the Election Assistance Commission meeting in Florida. I think it was about a week or two ago. And he talked about the countries that are most rapidly moving to internet voting. He said, of course, they're also most rapidly moving to a one-party system, so it may not be the best thing. But there are significant security concerns. There's a long history about those security concerns, and we have a lot of resources at our site. If you just put internet at our site, and it'll bring you to a page that gives you some of the informed perspective of the technologists. I want to say about Operation Bravo that there were printers involved, that everybody was able to print a copy. So it isn't a purely internet voting methodology. And in addition, all of those paper records were brought back to Okaloosa County and audited. And I think when you have circumstances like that where you have the opportunity, the ability to check that the totals were accurate and that voters' ballots were counted as cast, that makes all the difference. That's not a sort of a blanket endorsement. I'm saying that that's a feature or an element of the process that is important to those who have the concerns. Thanks.
I would ask that we measure the risk of online voting systems not against the perfect, but against the current. We have significant risks associated with our current voting systems. When we say that we don't want to have more expansive use of electronic support for voting for military voters because of the risks involved, and we don't compare that risk against what the current voting or absentee voting system is already, we're holding the military voter to a higher standard than the general absentee ballot voter. I think that's unfair. So, yes, could there, you know, are there risks involved? Yes, but we have significant, I mean, I'm sorry, but, you know, I still hear from a number of people about Ohio 2004 and the risks involved in that with the DREs. So, I mean, we accept a certain level of risk already. I think we need to be willing to accept a commensurate level of risk given the exigent circumstances that military and overseas voters have to deal with in order to be able to ensure that they have the same opportunity to vote as a regular absentee voter.
Thanks. I agree with that. I think we also need to respect their right to have their votes be accurately and safely counted. So just making sure that there's a measure of security seems to be respectful of our service people overseas, and we do respect them.
At this point, I'd like to continue on. I'd like to start on the brainstorming part of today's session. There are a lot of questions that need to be answered. What updates to Ohio law would ease the voting experience of those serving overseas? How can we better educate UOKAVA voters? Can we partner with our military liaisons, the National Guard, and recruiters to educate potential UOKAVA voters with an Ohio how-to guide? Can we use the federal write-in postcard for state and local elections as well? How can we simplify and standardize UOKAVA voting processes in Ohio? And the timing for absentee availability, can it be made available sooner? Those are a lot of questions that we've thrown out. Panel, if you'd like to go ahead and answer some of those or address those. Anyone? We already have touched on a lot of those questions, though.
One thing I'd like to add is with our current calendar system based on the revised code, I don't know how we can possibly get our absentee ballots much earlier than what we're doing now. We all know that the state has to certify the ballot, and that was just done, I believe, last Friday, correct, Pat?
Correct.
For the May primary, and we got notification on Monday, or you sent it out late Friday night, I believe.
Yes.
So with having to hold off and get like any state issues on or whatever, most of us do have ballot on demand printers. And of course our military and overseas ballots always get first priority. But to move the date up, I think you'd almost have to kind of rework the whole election calendar in itself.
How many days before the election can you generally have a ballot ready for email transmission?
Well, right now we have to have ballots ready 35 days before.
Frankly, if you send out an email ballot 35 days prior, that should be enough time to get for it to get back.
Okay.
I mean, the worst case scenario that the Military Postal System Agency is saying is 28 days,
okay,
one way.
Are there any election officials out in the audience that would like to discuss or talk about any of the questions that we have? I'd like to hear your ideas because you are the folks that are going to have to implement this if there are any changes. How do you feel it would be best implemented? Any takers?
I'll throw out something to get the juices going. The Pew Center on the States is working on a pilot program with the Department of Defense. There's a database, a personnel database called DEERS, Defense Enrollment Eligibility Reporting System, something like that. It was started basically to run the military medical care system and to make sure people were eligible for it. It's now expanded to be a generic personnel database. Your National Guard has access to this, even though they're a state-level organization until they get federally mobilized. So the idea is that we take the new statewide voter registration system that's centralized at the state level and has all the UOKAVA voters identified, send that over to the National Guard, and let them try to scrub that against the DEERS database. Technologically, that's the easy part. The difficult part is, what do you do with that data once you figure it out? How do you make sure that they've accurately identified a voter with a wrong address? How do you change that address? And so they're looking at a number of states to look at a pilot program like that. Maybe that's something that Ohio might be interested in getting involved in. Those are the sort of things. I mean, you're already doing a lot of that database scrubbing versus DMV records and Social Security Administration records. Technologically, it's not that difficult to scrub it against another database. It's just, how do you how do you resolve that once you have that?
Any other comments from the panelists?
I'm going to have to leave shortly, but I did want to bring up on a couple of the ideas that are here. As you well know, being election officials, there are several here that talk about the timing for absentee ballots. It would take a legislative change. Talking about the ease of voting experience, if we're looking to go to email, it's going to take a voting change, it's going to take a legislative change. Some of the ideas that are here, educate the voters, partner with the military liaisons, are all things that we can do without having any legislative changes. So we may need to break this particular group down to those that's going to require legislative change versus those that we could look as a group and work toward in trying to do better education and outreach to them.
Thank you, Pat. Anyone else have any questions or comments? It's still early. You're not lively enough. Sure, Peg.
When my daughter went to China for a year, I was just telling Mary Hill that people aren't aware that if you're overseas, you can send in your application January 1st of that year, and I sent the application for an absentee ballot all filled out on the card with her and said, mail this on January 2nd, which she did because I knew the boards do exactly what you're saying, which is they send out those overseas ballots the day they get ballots in, and it's... But, you know, you shouldn't have to have a mother who works in the system to know this, that somehow if we could get this information across more to people who are already overseas or who are going overseas, if there's some way to get to them, guys, get this done, send it to the board in January, and then you don't have to worry about getting your ballot almost by mail. I do think doing it electronically is much better, but she managed to get her ballot to and from China with no problem, because even the Chinese were intimidated by an official ballot and didn't open it and read it ahead of time. So I don't know how we do this. But if we can get this information out to people, maybe when troops are sent overseas, when they have their training beforehand, maybe that's the time to tell them, here's how you vote while you're there.
I'll tell you, the best way to get the military to be able to navigate the process better is to standardize it.
Yeah.
So I'll go back to what the Uniform Law Commission is doing. I mean, it's just... the panoply of laws that each state has make it very difficult for your average voting assistance officer to be able to navigate it. So to the extent that, you know, the standardization can take place, it can really help those military personnel be able to navigate a process. Because most of these military personnel are first-time voters. The reason that officers and senior enlisted voted at a much higher rate is because of their prior experience of failure. And they've learned how to work around the system. That's just a huge part of it. Now, when is Ohio's presidential preference primary?
March.
Okay. When is the absentee ballot application and registration deadline for that?
It's 35 days.
We have to have the ballots ready
25 days.
No. When does someone that wants to participate, someone that's a first-time voter, first-time UOCAVA voter, when do they have to have their absentee ballot application and or registration in to be able to participate in the presidential preference primary?
Until 30 days before the primary to register.
Okay, so mid-February. Okay. So someone did it in January. Because for 40% of the military personnel, they live in states who have earlier presidential preference primaries. But because the federal postcard application is not mandated to be accepted except in the calendar year of the election, they are unable to get their, they can't send in their federal postcard application for, let's say, last election cycle in 2007 and have that count for the 2008 election cycle. They have to send in yet another, so they can do it for the presidential preference primary, and then they got to send in yet another federal postcard application for the 2008 general election cycle. To the extent you might be able to say that you will accept a federal postcard application for the entire election cycle, you know, from the day after the previous general election until the next general election would probably help in that. Because frankly, most states are going to probably have increasing incentives to move up their primaries in 2012.
What I'd like to ask the audience, if anyone would answer, is how many counties in the state of Ohio do you think should participate in a pilot program of internet voting? Anyone want to answer that? How many you think would be a good? All 88?
Okay. I think it costs you less. I mean, you consider all the ballots that you get returned as undeliverable or never get returned. You assume that's a cost of yours. I mean, you have a 66% non-return rate. And you have about 60,000 military personnel and probably another 60,000 military dependents and about 50,000 overseas civilians that call Ohio home. Let's say it's $5 a ballot when you consider the postage and handling and printing and, you know, so you could take that money and apply it towards email transmission of ballots, probably save yourself a lot of money. Or internet voting, sink that money into the internet voting technology pilot projects, probably save yourselves a lot of money.
Any other comments or concerns from the panelists today? No? Any other questions? Well, I thank you all for participating, and I hope you enjoyed today's session. Enjoy the rest of the conference.